Good to see all of you this morning. Every church that I've been to, I would meet with the elders and the deacons, the men who would be in charge of hiring, and I would be honest and tell them, hey, you need to trust me to know what to preach, because I don't want to be in a situation where at some point somebody says, well, Mark, I think you need to preach on this, and then it's kind of mandated to me that here's what I have to preach. I'd rather them trust me to figure that out, and that's always been the case. So when Jimmy came to me with this series, he's like, let's do this series. And it's like I was pushed into this topic. And I know his intentions are good, and I'm all for it. And I think this will work great. And honestly, it's kind of been easier for me to have a theme. But I'm a guy who kind of sticks to the script sometimes, because when I first started, my issue was baptism. And when I was a young preacher and on fire and with the conservative background I had, I preached baptism in every sermon. I mean, just every sermon. And finally, the elders at my first church came to me and said, dude, you got to preach something else. You're always hammering on baptism. And I said, well, okay, what would you have me preach? Well, how about some character studies? They said, preach about Noah. Okay, I can preach about Noah. So I'm preaching about Noah one Sunday, and I talked about how God flooded the earth, and then it came to me. And I told him, with all that water, you could baptize a lot of people. So I don't know how this is going to work exactly. Jimmy was happy with me in the first service, so I assume this will be okay. I'm going to preach on this Goliath and David story for the entire month. And man, there's some good stuff there. One of my favorite stories. And then there are classes that will take place. Many of you have signed up for those as well. First sermon in this series is called Dead But Still Deadly. It's amazing how things come, and then they go, and then they come back. You know what I mean? Just think about fashion. Things that were here, and then they went away, and then they came back, like Birkenstock sandals. Used to be a thing back in the day. Went away. But if you'll check out our children's minister now, Darcy, she loves her Birkenstock sandals. Overalls. I wore overalls about every day growing up, and then they kind of went by the wayside, and they're back. Fanny packs. That's not a new thing. For all of you who think you're so cool with your fanny pack, those were here before. They went away, now they're back. Bell bottoms. Anybody own some bell bottoms still? Let me see your hands. Well, they're making a comeback. Ponchos. Used to be a thing. Then they weren't a thing. And now they seem to be a thing again. Scrunchies. Those aren't new, y'all. Scrunchies have been around, but then they disappeared. Now they're around. How about Polaroid cameras? They went away because of technology, and now everybody wants a Polaroid. Flannel, it's made a comeback. It was here, it went away, it's back again. The ultimate example for comebacks for me was my two oldest grandsons. That's Hudson on your left and Cooper on the right. And went to take them to McDonald's and told them to wait in the car. As I get to the car, they're dancing around in the car. I mean, they're just giving it one of these numbers here. And I know the car ain't started and there ain't no music. So they're making up their own music. Well, it wasn't any tune they made up, because as soon as I opened the door, I could hear Cooper say, burn, baby, burn. And his little brother would reply, disco inferno. Only when it came out of his mouth, it was disco inferno. And I'm thinking, your combined ages are 13. And it's the year 2019, and you're singing and dancing to a song I danced to in the 70s. It's amazing how things come, then they go, then they come back. Now, there are other things that are a little bit more deadly than fashion. Look at the head of this bad boy right here. He lost a fight with the sharp end of a shovel. But if you thought the lack of a body would slow him down, think again. Turns out, he could still bite and kill you for up to an hour after being relieved from the rest of his body. Another way to say it would be, even though it's been killed, it can still kill. Or maybe a better way to say it would be, dead, but still deadly. That's a pretty good description of Satan. Jesus defeated him on the cross. What did Jesus say? It is finished. I mean, he won the war. And because of Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection, Satan is nothing but a beaten snake with its head cut off. But don't get cocky. Don't think that just because we've won the war through Jesus Christ that there are not going to be battles along the way. There's still enough venom in his fangs to do you great harm. Peter used an analogy. He didn't call him a snake. He called him a lion. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. So let me ask you a question this morning as we jump into this series. Have you ever faced something in your life that you thought, man, I've overcome that. I'm done with that mess. And then you were cruising along only to find yourself face to face with it again. I mean, you put it down once and you thought, okay, never again. And here we are facing that same giant in our path after we've already dealt with it. I want to capsule this series in one thought, and here's the thought, and I'd like an amen after it if you don't mind. God is big enough, and what God has done is enough to give us a full and free life. Amen? Amen. Say it with me. God is big enough, and what God has done is enough to give us a full and free life. But while that's true, we've all experienced those things that come back that we thought we dealt with and worked through. Well, I want you to know this morning there's hope and there's help because God is big enough and God is more than enough to give us a full and free life. There are challenges that come to you and I, and I don't know if you came to church for this kind of encouragement, but when it comes to battles in life, you either came from one, you are in one, or you're headed toward one. Aren't you glad you came to church for that kind of encouragement? You're either, you came from one, you're in one, or you're headed toward one. That's why I like 1 Samuel 17. One of my favorite stories in the Bible, and I get to talk about it all month. Thank you, Jimmy Johnson. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 3 gives us the setting. So the Philistines and Israelites faced each other on opposite hills with the valley between them. Picture it in your head. Got the bad guys over here, the good guys, God's guys over here, with a gap running between the two. For my message this morning, I want to tell you what's standing in the gap between these two hills, all right? Number one, first of all, there's a Goliath in the gap. Doesn't Goliath sound like the name of a giant? What's that giant's name? Goliath. Sounds like a giant. And where's he from? Anybody know? He's from a town called Gath, G-A-T-H. Doesn't that sound like a place a giant would be from? Goliath from Gath. I mean, if it was Goliath from Shoals, I wouldn't be afraid. This just sounds scary. Goliath from Gath. So I studied about Gath to get ready for this series. Gath was the land of the giants. He wasn't the only giant there. There's giants all over the place in Gath. And there's one dude so ugly that you never want to come face to face with him. He's found in 1 Chronicles 20, verse 6. In another battle with the Philistines at Gath, they encountered a huge man with six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot. And then the Bible does the math for you. 24 in all. Six, 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 six. My cousins from Hazard, Kentucky could have passed math class if they had that many digits. You think I'm kidding, but my dad, he came in one time when he was a kid from outside and he took his shoes off to retie them. And my mama said, what are you doing? He said, listen, they're so tight, they're cutting off my calculation. And knowing where he's from, that makes sense to me. Goliath is known for his height, the tallest person ever recorded. I read about him when I was a kid in my Guinness World Book of Records. Robert Wadlow, 8 feet, 11 inches tall. He's has since died. The tallest man alive today is Sultan Kosin, 8 feet, 3 inches tall. Both of these dudes would be looking up at Goliath, because here's the tale of the tape. He's 9 feet, 6 inches tall. He'd be an NBA coach's dream. 9 feet, 6 inches. Tell me the Pacers couldn't use him. He has a nickname. He's called the Champion. That's a cool nickname. His helmet is bronze, and his armor weighs 175 pounds. That's like Brett Johnson. He's like wearing Brett Johnson around every time he goes to battle. 175 pounds of armor. His iron-tipped spear weighs 15 pounds. Can I call it what it is? This man's a freak. I mean, he's a freak. And mercy sakes, can he trash talk? Listen to verse 8. Goliath stood and shouted a taunt across the Israelites, across this gap. I'm the Philistine champion, but you are only the servants of Saul. Choose one man to come down here and fight me. If he kills me, we'll be your slaves. But if I kill him, you'll be our slaves. I defy the armies of Israel today. Send me a man who'll fight me. When Saul and the Israelites heard this, they were terrified and deeply shaken. And if that ain't enough, look at verse 16. For 40 days, every morning and evening, the Philistine champion strutted in front of the Israelite army. So he's down in this gap between the armies, and he's just talking trash to them in the morning, at night. Next day, in the morning, at night. 2 days later, in the morning, at night. Here I am. Come get some. Come on. Annoying. And condescending. Yet still, nobody would step forward and step out. I love this part of the story. You have a contrast between Goliath and Saul. Goliath is a trash-talking, threatening, beating his chest, looking for a fight. King Saul, terrified and deeply shaken. Somebody tell me why Saul was king in the first place. Anybody know why they made Saul their king? Somebody help me out here. Wasn't because of his good looks, although I think he was good looking. They made him king because he was tall. The Bible says he was the tallest, biggest, tallest man in Israel. That's why he's the king. So when the biggest, tallest man is afraid, when the biggest, tallest man in your crowd don't want any part of that, then nobody else does either. This is why a church will never rise past its leadership. If the leader's afraid, people are going to be afraid. If the leader won't step out, people won't step out. That's why it's important that you choose the leaders that you do, because you can't go further than the leader takes you. Saul says, I don't want any part of this. Reminds me of little Matt Wagner in our Christmas play at church. He only had one line to say. We knew he'd botch it. The line was, it is I, be not afraid. And he did okay in rehearsal. I mean, how are you going to screw that up? It is I, be not afraid. But the night of the play, he got so nervous, his line came out this way. It's me, and I'm scared to death. That's a whole different kind of play after that. I'll tell you why Saul's afraid of Goliath. And this is a principle you need to carry throughout this series. The further you are from God, the bigger your Goliath looks. It's logistics. The further you are from God, the bigger your Goliath looks. And I don't know what the name of your Goliath is. It might be rejection. It might be fear. It might be addiction. It might be death. Whatever your Goliath is, the further you are from God, the bigger your Goliath looks. There's a Goliath in the gap. But there's also, number two, grace standing in the gap. Now listen, this scene happens. Let me give you some history. This is well after the Red Sea has parted. This is well after they've seen God produce fire by night and a cloud by day for them to follow. This is well after manna in the wilderness. They've already come in the promised land. They've marched around Jericho 7 times. They saw the walls fall. But here they are in the promised land, realizing, guess what? Just because we made it to the promised land doesn't mean we're not going to have any more difficulties. TV preachers should be shot for convincing people that when you come to Jesus, you'll never have any more problems. There's no more damaging doctrine than to think that just because you come to the Lord, all of a sudden you're going to be healthy all the time, financially well off, and never have any problems anymore. Whoever sold you that sold you a crock. It's not true. What you need to know is that when those problems and those battles and those giants come, that Jesus is there to take up the battle for you. Listen, mark it down, friends. The same grace that brought you from where you were to where you are now is the same grace that will get you where you need to be. Do you believe that this morning? Same grace. That's what David understood. So David comes. If you're familiar with the story, he's tending his sheep, and his dad said, hey, go take some food to your brothers who are on the front lines. So David takes some food, and he gets there just at the time that this trash-talking giant is mouthing off. And David says to a soldier, hey, is there a reward for putting this guy down? Did you know that was in the story? David says, is there a reward? Somebody takes this dude out? And then David's older brother jumps on David and says, why ain't you home taking care of the sheep? Doesn't like it at all. I love David's response, 1 Samuel 17:32. I wish the Bible could speak out loud so you could hear the tone. Because I can hear David going, eh. Don't worry about this Philistine. I'll go fight him. I think that's how he said it. I'll take care of it. This ain't David thumping his chest. This ain't Logan Fugate. My dad, through the years, has mastered the Tarzan yodel or whatever that is. He will beat his chest and he'll go, oh. And if church people are there, he'll really do it. And then he'll look at mom and he'll say, me, Tarzan, you, Jane. And my mom has perfected her comeback. She always says, you keep it up, Tarzan, you'll be sleeping with Cheetah. Well, this ain't David beating his chest. This is David standing in the power of God. Look at verse 34. Man, this is where it gets good. David persisted. I've been taking care of my father's sheep and goats, and when a lion or a bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock, I go after it with a club and rescue the lamb from its mouth. If the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw and club it to death. I've done this to both lions and bears. Oh my. And I'll do it to this pagan Philistine too, for he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from this Philistine. Saul's response is comical. Saul says, all right, may the Lord be with you. You have any friends like that? Go with God. I got your back. Way back, but I got your back. Listen. Why doesn't our past experience bolster our faith? I'm gonna call on some of you right now by name. And I just want a yes or a no from you, okay? Can we do that? Can we do that? Dan, hasn't God been there for you before? Greg, hasn't God been there for you before? Sarah, hasn't God been there for you before? Debbie? Hank, hasn't God been there for you before? Terry, hasn't God been there for you before? Why does that history not lead us to the surefire, tight-locked conclusion that God will always be there for us? Why is David not impressed with what everybody else is impressed with? I'll tell you why. Because he's too impressed with God to be impressed with this giant. Everybody in the Israelite army is saying, he's too big to kill. Not David. He's too big to miss. It's a whole different perspective. I'm telling you, grace is more impressive than any giant that you and I will ever face. Grace is stronger than rejection, stronger than addiction, stronger than loneliness, stronger than anger. God gave you the grace you needed the last time to face that giant in your life, and maybe you thought you conquered him, and you took him out, and you knocked him down. Well, he got up again, and he's here again. He came back, but that same grace that enabled you to get through the battle the last time will enable you to win the battle this time. Mark it down. Grace wins every time. Grace wins. Say that. Grace wins. To the prodigal son, grace wins. To the woman at the well, to the blind man and the beggar, for always and forever, for the lost out on the street, for the worst part of you and me, for the thief on the cross, for a world that is lost, grace wins. There's a war between guilt and grace, and they're fighting for a sacred place, but I'm living proof that grace wins every time. There may be a Goliath standing in the gap, but the grace of God is standing in that gap as well. And when the grace of God meets Goliath, Goliath must fall. There's a Goliath in the gap. There's grace in the gap. Let me close with this. There's glory in the gap. And this is where it really gets good. Saul gives David some armor, but Saul shops at the big and tall store. It don't fit David. He said, I can't even walk. I'm like the tin man with this stuff on. So I just need my shepherd's staff and my slingshot. Man, I learned as a kid, you can do some real damage with a slingshot. And so David goes out with nothing but a slingshot and a staff. And the giant shouts at him, come over here. I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the wild animals. In other words, come get some. I'm about to open up a can on you, little boy. And here's the climax of the story. David replied to the Philistine. Man, again, I wish we could hear the tone. This is some kind of faith here. You come to me with sword, spear, and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. Today, the Lord will conquer you, and I'll kill you, cut off your head. And then I'll give the dead bodies of your men to the birds and wild animals. And here's the kicker. The whole world will know that there's a God in Israel. Look, he didn't say the whole world will know the name David. The whole world will know about the hero I was here today. No. The whole world will know there's a God in Israel. And everyone assembled here will know that the Lord rescues his people, but not with sword and spear. This is the Lord's battle, and he will give you to us. As Goliath moved closer to attack, David quickly ran out to meet him. He's running toward the back. This is Braveheart. You ever see that? I mean, they're running full speed ahead toward the enemy. David quickly ran out to meet him. Reaching into his shepherd's bag and taking out a stone, he hurled it with his sling and hit the Philistine in the forehead. The stone sank in, and Goliath stumbled and fell face down on the ground. Who's bound to the Lord now? So David triumphed over the Philistine with only a sling and a stone, for he had no sword. Then David ran over and pulled Goliath's sword from its sheath, and David used it to kill him and cut off his head. There's so much there. Let me say this, and I want to be sensitive and tactful. I don't want you to take it the wrong way. If a church is really, really struggling to the point of almost dying, that's not just a reflection on that church. It's a reflection on the God that they worship and serve. And if a church is doing very well and growing and adding people, that church, it doesn't get the glory, that all goes to the glory of God. David wasn't in that gap to get glory for himself. He was there to defend the glory of God. This is an awesome, awesome scene. I showed you my oldest grandson, the tall one there. When he was the only one I had, I went to visit him. He was about 3 years old. I drive 2 hours and 15 minutes, and as soon as I walk in the door, he says, "Poppy, I'm hungry." "Dude, your mom's here. It's lunchtime." That's what I was thinking, but I didn't say that. "What do you want?" That's what I said, because I'm soft. And he said, "I want McDonald's, number 3. He was specific. So I said, "All right, I'll be right back." So I got in the car, drove to McDonald's, which ain't very far. And my phone rings, and I said, "Hello?" And he said, "It's Cooper, Poppy. I forgot to tell you. Supersize it." I think the Lord gave us McDonald's, and the devil gave us supersize it. That's what I think. But he would say, I don't want regular. I don't want normal. I want you to make it as big as they will make it. I'm wondering sometimes if God doesn't look at his church and say, "You know what, y'all? You need to supersize me." Not sure if you caught it in the verses we read, but David said, this is the Lord's battle. Don't miss this. It's like the story of the little boy who had to deal with the bully at school every day. He got pushed down. His books got knocked out of his hand. His glasses got knocked off his face. That little boy was me. Pleasant Elementary School, Pleasant, Indiana, 5th grade, and we had like this 20-year-old dude in our class. Some of you have had a guy in 5th grade that way. I don't know how old he was, but he was a foot taller than everyone else, and he had a little bit of gray in his beard. And I was an easy target for 2 reasons. I had thick glasses, and I'm mouthy. So it wasn't just him who wanted to beat me up. But this guy loomed large to me. I was a little bit intimidated. I thought about him when I went to school. Okay, if I go this way, maybe I won't see him. I thought when I went to the bathroom, what if he's in there alone and he's going to stick my head in the toilet? I thought, what if I bump into him in the hallway? I mean, he was in my head. He didn't even have to be there to affect me. That's what a giant can do. Even when they're not there, they're messing with you because they're in your head. I was intimidated. So I finally told my dad. And I told him, this kid keeps messing with me. So Dad takes me to school one day, and Dale Duke, that's the kid. Doesn't that sound like a bully too? Dale Duke from Fairview. That sounds deadly. And he's starting walking toward me. I thought, here goes my glasses again. Well, what I didn't know was my dad got out of the car and was standing right behind me. And I could see it on Dale Duke's face that he didn't want any part of that. So then I got mouthy again. Come on now. Come on. Big boy, what you got? He didn't want any part of that. When I realized, okay, this battle right now is not mine. Belongs to my dad back here. It's time for some of us here today to stop letting the giant ruin our life. That person, that problem, that situation, that emotion, that fear, that circumstance that looms large over you every morning, every evening, day after day, that giant must fall. I love verse 54, and it sums it up. You probably get tired of me telling you how much I love the Bible, but man, when you read stuff like this, how do you not love the Bible? David took the Philistine's head to Jerusalem. Just carrying it, which is what I would do too. Took it to Jerusalem, but he stored the man's armor, Goliath's armor, in his own tent. That fascinates me. Why would he do that? Why would he take the head of Goliath to Jerusalem and store Goliath's armor in his own tent? The answer is what this series is all about. That oversized head in Jerusalem is like you and I having a trophy case. And it's to remind you that when another fool from Gath shows up, your head can be next to this head if you defy the living God. And as far as the armor in his own house, every morning when he gets up and sees that armor, he'll be reminded that when he was a teenage boy, God made sure that Goliath must fall. And David knew he'd face more giants in the future. And you got to be able to look back over your life, see what God did yesterday, so that when you face a new giant today, you'll know he's no match for you and your father. And when that challenge or that problem or that burden or that giant comes up against you the next time, well then, just like the last time you and the Lord faced him, Goliath must fall. When we look at this story, we assume that we're David in the story, right? Isn't that how you get the analogies from your preachers and teachers? We're David, Goliath's our giant, we face our giant. There's a very real sense where Jesus is David in this story, and Goliath is sin. And you and I have absolutely no chance in that battle were it not for Jesus taking up that battle for us. I showed you a Steve Harvey video years ago at Easter. He introduces Jesus in his own unique way. And when he gets to the end, he has his audience stand up and they applaud and they hoot and holler for Jesus. I've been to ball games with some of you. I know what you're capable of when it comes to cheering. And shame on you if you sit like a wooden Indian in church and go crazy at B&L over a ball game. So when Steve Harvey has his audience stand and applaud, I want you to stand and join in, and we give the Lord a hand this morning. Let's close with this.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to introduce a man who needs no introduction. His credits are too long to list. He has done the impossible time after time. He hails out of a manger in Bethlehem, Jerusalem, by way of heaven. His mother is still headlining in the Catholic Church today. His daddy is the author of a book that has been on the bestseller list since the beginning of time. He holds the record for the world's greatest fish fry. He fed 5,000 hungry souls with 2 fish, 5 loaves of bread. He can walk on water, turn water into wine. No special effects, no camera tricks. He has a headshot on every church fan across the country. Even before the kings of comedy, he was hailed the king of all kings, ruler of the universe, Alpha and Omega, beginning and the end, the bright and the morning star. Some say he's the Rose of Sharon, and some say he's the Prince of Peace. Get up on your feet, put your hands together, and show your love for the second coming of the one and only.
Satan is no match for Jesus. Death is no match for Jesus. Rejection is no match for Jesus. In his presence, demons flee. In his presence, burdens are lifted. In his presence, hope is given. And in his presence, every single time, Goliath must fall. Amen.